Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Hello, Wisconsin.
Former President Donald Trump takes a break from his criminal trial in New York to hold a rally in Wisconsin. Plus, pro-Palestinian protests erupt on UW-Madison and UW-Milwaukee campuses. And we have the latest on who's in and who's out of the running for the state Supreme Court race next year. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 3rd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, we're going to start with Donald Trump, who was back in the battleground state. He was here in Wisconsin on Wednesday and also held a rally in Michigan. And they were significant because he used his day off from the criminal trial in New York to hit back on the campaign trail and rally supporters. Now, of course, we're going to get to what he talked about. But this trip comes as he is like neck and neck in a lot of polls with President Joe Biden. And there was hundreds of people lined up to see him and to get a glimpse of him because this criminal trial in New York has largely prevented him from being able to get out there and talk to supporters. Now, let's move on to the issues, because we've talked about what the latest Marquette University Law School poll says, and he hit on pretty much on all of the issues. The economy was a big one, immigration as well, abortion. He also weighed in on the campus protests and about voting. We're first going to start with the issue of abortion, because we know Democrats are hitting this issue very, very hard. They are banking on this, banking on this to be the issue to drive voters to the polls in November. Former President Donald Trump went on for about 4 minutes talking about this topic, and this comes as Democrats are kind of painting him as if he's elected, he's going to implement a national abortion ban. And the former president has been walking a very fine tightrope on this issue because he doesn't want to, you know, concern his base. Mm-hmm. And then you have independent voters who don't want him to go too far. So now he's back on the theme of that the state should decide. So let's hear a little bit about what the former president said and how Democrats are refuting some of his claims that he made.
States are deciding, and some people are unhappy because it's too liberal a policy or too conservative a policy, but we brought it back into the states where it has to be. And you also have to remember, as a politician, you also have to get elected, because if you don't get elected, it goes back into the federal government, perhaps, and then you have one policy that's not going to work.
Trump's latest comment leaves little doubt. If he's elected, he will sign a national abortion ban. He will allow women who have abortions to be punished and prosecuted, and he will allow states to invade women's privacies. He is going to put IVF and contraception in jeopardy. November's election will determine whether women in the United States have reproductive freedom or whether Trump's new administration will continue to control women's health care decisions.
So you hear from the former president there kind of saying, well, you know, I still have to get elected. Yeah. So he's telling supporters there, like, hey, even if you don't really like how I'm talking about this rhetoric, you know, you still might want me over, you know, President Joe Biden on this issue.
So watching the rally, I mean, Trump always hits his greatest hits, right? You know, talking about immigration, college kids, you know, Crooked Joe, surveying the crowd about, like, should I call him Crooked Joe or Sleepy Joe, which you like better? The whole, like, kind of, like, shtick.
Work in the crowd.
Yeah. The abortion thing, though, kind of stuck to me a little bit because, one, he said that wasn't on the teleprompter, and two, it was, like, this kind of rambling trying to get to a position of saying, you know what, I'm going to have to kind of maybe not say things you guys like the next few months, but you got to go with me anyway. You don't have a choice. And the backdrop is Time Magazine had an interview this week with Trump in which he basically said he would be okay with states monitoring women's pregnancies if they abortion bans. There's talk of a national abortion ban if he's elected. So this is an issue Democrats want to use. He's got to fend off that possible, you know, attack line, but also keep the base happy. I can't imagine a lot of anti-abortion groups who love to see a national abortion ban, for example, are happy with Trump basically saying, you got to stick with me no matter what, and I might not deliver what you want to deliver. So it's really fascinating to watch him walk that tightrope. Also, he said in some interviews that he'd have more to say about various things. For example, there's a push to ban medical abortions, the medication being sent through the mail, the Comstock Act from 100-some years ago. He's kind of like dancing on that topic. Like, there's all these, like, what-ifs out there And he's trying to keep them at bay because those things are not popular or good for him with the electorate, especially swing voters this fall.
And meanwhile, Democrats are going to keep attacking him in on this issue and painting him as, well, you're the one who elected the, you know, three justices to the U.S. Supreme Court that overturned Roe. So that's going to be a reoccurring message that we hear a lot on the campaign trail. Also, want to hit on the economy, too, because inflation is something that a lot of people are still feeling, even though the Biden campaign is touting that inflation is down. You know, we're gonna recover. We're going to come back. One thing that he, Trump kind of nitpicked a little bit is that President Joe Biden has a lot heavily repeated on the campaign trail that he wants to raise taxes on the wealthy and big corporations to make the tax system more fair. So that was something the former president talked a lot about. And now I want to shift on to like voting issues as well, because there's this thing, you know, where the state Republicans and national Republicans, we hear from Senator Ron Johnson, we hear from Chairman Brian Schimming quite a lot that, hey, get out, early vote, you know, encourage people to absentee vote because they don't want to be behind Democrats on Election Day, tens of thousands of ballots. Well, you have the former president then saying, I want one day voting by paper ballot is what he told supporters on Wednesday. So there's these conflicting messages. And we know Trump continues to repeat false claims that he won the 2020 election here in Wisconsin. We know that's not true. So it's once again this fine line where even Brian Schimming said, he talked to reporters before the speech saying, yeah, we're working on that. I'm constantly in communications with the Trump campaign about this issue. You know, RNC people are on board with it, yet your top dog is not embracing it.
Yeah, and I actually talked to Republicans this week who said, you know, Trump's getting better sometimes about banking votes, about early voting to try and get more on message. Then he does something like that, the rally where he kind of undercuts the entire thing. So what do you do if you're a Republican? How do you get them to have faith, your base, and early voting, again, to bank votes ahead of the election to try and focus on more casual Republican voters who haven't turned out yet? Because both parties will track who's turning absentee ballots in. They know the profile of who they want to turn out. If you haven't sent a ballot in, they want to try and target you. If not to vote early, to vote on election day. The more they have banked, easier it is to focus on the persuadable voter to turn him or her out on election day to get their vote in.
It'll be definitely something to keep tabs on to see if Republicans have tallies of how many people actually flip to voting early. Also, another thing on this issues list that we're talking about is campus protests. Of course, this is happening across the U.S., but now it's happening right in our backyard with pro-Palestinian protests erupting all over the place. Trump called these protesters who are getting violent, quote, lunatics. But, you know, moving on to what's happening on UW-Madison and UW-Milwaukee, you know, I was just out there a few times this week on UW-Madison's campus, and everything was peaceful until there was a clash with police and protesters on Wednesday morning. They tore down the encampments, and at times things got pretty tense, even got a little bit violent. But kind of the good news now out of this is that student protesters are talking to UW officials. So as for now, they're taking a pause on police enforcement. They're going to have continued discussions. But what the key contentious point is that these encampments are illegal. Mm-hmm. It's illegal on most college campuses that you're seeing across the state. So that's something I think looking ahead to see what could happen. Also, there was about 34 arrests that happened on Wednesday. So UW System President Jay Rothman addressed some of the media talking about this. And he was asked specifically, well, what about, you know, are they going to be punished? Is there going to be expulsions possibly? He said that was kind of up to UW Chancellor Jennifer Mnuchin. So we'll see what happens there. But first, I just want to hear from Rothman first about how he kind of addressed this issue overall happening on campus.
At the end of the day, certainly we are committed to freedom of expression on our campuses. That's absolutely critical. It's a hallmark of our universities, certainly a long history at UW-Madison for that. But I think we have to differentiate freedom of expression and legal protesting versus illegal activities. And we will continue to address illegal activities on our campuses as appropriate. I am disappointed that there were four officers injured this morning. I was pleased that there was only limited force that had to be exerted, but I am very disappointed that four officers were injured in this process. And I think there will be judicial consequences, presumably, for the perpetrators of those acts. As it relates to other actions in terms of, I think, you know, the Chancellor Mnuchin has made it clear that there is accountability for actions that are taken, and the university will make appropriate determinations on that front, I am confident.
So the overall message from a lot of these student protesters are that they want the universities to divest and cut ties with Israel, any ties. There's also a growing list of things for, you know, calls for immediate ceasefire in Gaza. UW-Madison specifically is calling for cops to be off campus. Don't think they're going to get too far with that one. But the top priority here is divestment, which we're seeing across the country as well.
Look, let's talk the politics of this entire situation. First, university is in like a no-win situation in some ways because we both know from going to college that there's a different kind of culture on campus, right? There's that cultural bubble sometimes on campus. So as administration, they need to kind of work with students, and they have to kind of, okay, how are we going to deal with these guys or make a happy place on campus? When you're dealing with those concerns, you're making Republican lawmakers hold the purse strings unhappy, right? Because they want this stuff cleared out right away. During that clash one morning, Robin Boss, Assembly Speaker, was saying, great move by Mnuchin, the Chancellor, happy to see this. But then as they allowed the camp to come back on, they were unhappy. So there's that piece. The political piece, too, is about this fall. Republicans are, quite frankly, happy to see what's going on, and Democrats are somewhat nervous because, go back to that uninstructed vote from the April primary. There was a thought after that, okay, it wasn't that bad in Wisconsin. Yeah, it's 40-some thousand votes, but they'll come home come November. This is not a sign of them coming home in November. Remember, Robin Voss was not happy with UW, the system, because in 2022 and 2023, he felt like college campuses turned out in major numbers for Democrats or for Janet Protasiewicz, the Supreme Court race, and paved the way for Republican and conservative losses. This is not a sign of those college kids coming home this fall to turn out in that way. Yes, there's the abortion issue, which we're going to see Democrats hammer on constantly. But how does that issue play when it's married with this one? There's obviously not an overlap here, but I'm saying like the competing interest of what are these college kids going to do this fall? So Republicans are like, yeah, you know, keep, you know, this is a great sign of dissension.
Not too upset about it, yeah.
For Democrats, are like, okay, how do we get past this? How do we get these kids back into the fold come fall? Now, finals start next week, I believe, graduation's next weekend, kids go home for the summer. But when they come back in the fall, does anybody think the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is going to be over by September? Well, obviously, people would love to see that. Peace is a good thing. But if it's not over, what happens to the encampments? They come back the fall. Now you're putting that right up in September, October, elections in November. Like, there is a real political danger here for Democrats because they're seeing their coalition fray. And look, Joe Biden won Wisconsin by less than 21,000 votes in 2020. They can't afford to lose any piece of that, especially with the with inflation, with where swing voters are at. This is a piece of the coalition. They got to get back in the fold by the fall.
Right. And you bring up a really good timeline, too, because finals, some are underway this week. Some are going to continue next week. Graduation is next weekend. And I talked to a lot of students on the UW-Madison campus who were not part of the protest, but were really frustrated. Not only did they express that, hey, we're the COVID era. We didn't have a high school graduation 4 years ago. Now we're seeing across the country some campuses are just canceling graduation at some colleges. They're fearful that could happen. I don't think that's going to happen here, but it's still something in the back of their mind. I think you bring a good point as well is I don't think this is going to be over come this fall, but it is. You know, summer's going to happen. They might go, but they might come back. Also, what it was interesting, too, I talked to an expert at Marquette University this week about just kind of comparing and contrasting about, you know, the anti-war protests we saw in the 1960s till now. What he brought up, what's probably the biggest difference, is that these are turning violent. Mm-hmm. I mean, but at the same time, they were both calling for divestments and where the funds in the war and who they were tied to. So we'll see where this issue goes. It's also splitting, what you said, politically. And, JR, you know, you talked to Senator Tammy Baldwin and Senator Ron Johnson and some others about this issue this week.
Yeah, but also don't forget, 1960s, Democratic Convention in Chicago, didn't go as peacefully. The
Very good
protests.
Point. Very good point.
It's also
yes.
a nightmare for Democrats going back to Chicago this summer and have this kind of stuff flare up again.
Right. All right. Let's move on to another topic this week, and we're going to turn our attention focus to the state Supreme Court and the issue about constitutional rights. So this week, liberal Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Dallet on Tuesday called for a more expansive reading of Wisconsin's Constitution to provide broader protections for individual liberties than the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It drew a strong rebuke from conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley that her colleague was issuing a, quote, call for an anti-democratic power grab. Now, why is this relevant? Because this comes as the court is going to take on a case that asks justices to find that the state constitution provides a right to an abortion. Mm-hmm. So kind of coming back to this issue.
So the background is the court was asked to decide a challenge to Wisconsin's adoption laws. I found out this week, did not know this, Wisconsin law restricts adoption to married couples. An unmarried person can adopt somebody, but two unmarried people can't adopt a child. An unmarried partner can't adopt somebody's child. Never knew that before. This case, there was a couple, a man and woman, woman's child. The man had been her partner for, I think, almost a decade, had become a father figure to the child. The biological father was not in the picture, really. They wanted to allow him to adopt. The court said, we can't because state law says you cannot. Challenged on the 14th Amendment U.S. Constitution. That was not an equal protection issue. Court unanimously said, we can't allow this to happen. The legislature has this law. There's a low bar to cross that the law is valid. It's valid. But in the concurring opinion from Dalit, she went on this kind of, here's this thing you guys should think about. This case, they talked about the 14th Amendment U.S. Constitution. But here's the Article 1, Section 1, the state constitution. It talks about how all people are born free. Like, there's more expansive language in this article in the state constitution than the 14th Amendment. You lawyers and people come before us all the time. You're always over here in the 14th Amendment. You should maybe look over here. To some people I've talked to, it's like a roadmap on the abortion case. Like, hey, you might want to look over here when you challenge abortion law, because they're being asked in this case to find the state constitution of Wisconsin has a guaranteed right to an abortion, much like Roe v. Wade was interpreted back in 73 of the U.S. Constitution. Now, will that be the end-all, be-all in the case? We'll see. Worth noting that Dalit's concurring opinion was signed on by Protas Sewich and Ann Walsh Bradley, two fellow liberals. Karofsky did not sign on to show her own concurring opinion about some other stuff. Maybe she just felt like that wasn't really necessary in this case to write that thing. But there's that. But Bradley, Rebecca Bradley, is saying, whoa, ho, ho, you guys are trying to, like, basically have the court expand these rights improperly. The state constitution, she says, it's what's in the constitution. It's what's in the text. End of story, period. There are no rights to interpret in there. It's what's in the text. So watch for that discussion when the abortion case gets there sometime later on this year.
Yeah, sometime, right? Yeah. We've been talking about it for quite some time. We'll see when it gets there. Staying on the topic of the state Supreme Court, we're going to shift our attention to 2025, because late Friday we had some news that the field of Democrats, I should say, or liberals, excuse me, is a proper term, narrowed quite a bit. Yeah. So we already knew, if you're looking at your screen, Dane County Judge Chris Taylor decided to not run. And then what's new is Pedro Colon. He's a Milwaukee County judge. He told UJR that he is not going to be running. The big question now is, it kind of just leaves the field for Dane County Judge Susan Crawford, who told reporters last week she's still strongly considering it, still hasn't made up her mind, but seems like when you say that, you're a little likely candidate.
So look, when Ann Walsh Bradley announced she's going to retire, it caught people off guard. A lot of people, like somebody told me, raise their hand right away, because they're like, this is an opportunity. Chris Taylor, the sense is that she kind of went, okay, wait a second, I don't really talk to my family about this. They weren't really maybe on board. Their options down the road, because remember, in 26, Rebecca Bradley's up for re-election. In 27, Annette Ziegler, there are other races to run. Pedro Colon, now in the First Court of Appeals in Milwaukee, he told me basically it wasn't his time. If you look at the profile of progressive judges who've run and be successful in the Supreme Court lately, they've been female sitting judges who are former prosecutors. Pedro does not fit check two of those three boxes. Okay, Susan Crawford checks all three of them. Now the question about her is, does she have the stomach, the sharp elbows of what this race is going to be like? Now, in talking to people this week, look, Jill Karofsky, Rebecca Dalit, Janet Protasiewicz, they all had to grow into a statewide campaign, right? They'd been running for circuit court before, but this is a different beast. They also had the fire in the belly, they call it in politics, to go out there and do what needs to be done to win a race. They're tough as nails, they like throwing elbows, that kind of stuff. For Susan, that's the question. She's won a tight race for Dane County Circuit Court, but that's two progressives against each other. This is going to be her, most likely, versus possibly Brad Schimmel, former Republican Attorney General. Marie Lazar on the Court of Appeals is still thinking about running for this race, a seat. We're waiting for her to make up her mind. But Schimmel run statewide before, won once, lost once. He's already said he will take the state GOP's money. Remember last year, Protasiewicz took direct transfers from the state Democratic Party. Daniel Kelly didn't. Republicans are happy because Schimmel seems more geared, prepared for the rigors campaign, the financial requirements of this campaign. So they're happy about that. But he's also thrown a lot of elbows this time. He's been through a tough race.
Right.
So will Crawford have that fortitude, if she gets in, to take that on? People are betting she will, I've talked to, but it's going to be something for her to grow into. Also, you can't discount that somebody else might kick the tires. The one thing we know for sure anymore is that there's no lane for a moderate for Supreme Court primaries anymore.
Right.
So somebody from the left or the right could jump in, but right now we're looking like we're getting close to Susan Crawford versus Brad Schimmel as a field, which is really early to set
it. I was just going to bring that up because it's so early. But I think also when I talk to people and ask them about it, money is a huge factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're coming off the heels of the most expensive U.S. Supreme Court in state U.S. history, excuse me, you know what you're going to be running up against. So I think that, you know, that gives Schimmel a little bit more time to get out there, to go, you know, to these dinners and talk to people and get his name out there. I mean, of course, he's run statewide. But also, that's going to be, you know, a challenge for anyone who wants to get in this race as well.
And I still say, tell me what happens in November. Will help me kind of handicap the field for Supreme Court next year, because if Trump wins, going back to what we talked about abortion before, this election will take place against the backdrop of his first 100 days in office. I mean, if he's talking about allowing states to monitor pregnancies, if he's talking about a national abortion ban, that will amplify that issue next year. If Joe Biden wins, I mean, look, in 2018, Democrats won nationally in 2018, won the governor's office. There was a little bit of complacency that spring, and they learned lots of lessons from the race they lost to Brian Hagedorn, but that's something to keep an eye on. Yes, the Democratic Party has got way more resources right now than the Republican Party does. It gives whoever emerges on the progressive side an edge because of the finances, but you have to have that energy and enthusiasm as well going into that.
And a lot of stake, for sure. All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising this week is the Republican National Committee, and we're talking about the races within this.
So state conventions, May 18th, there will be races for these national committee positions. So every state gets three. Chairperson is one, a national committee man, national committee woman. That's the Republican methodology. Already, we're seeing some races develop. And what I'm bringing up is more not who necessarily is running, but like what it symbolizes. So on the Republican, on the man side, if that's what we're going to call it, Tom Tribal is not seeing another term for 2018. Brad Courtney is running for sure. Also, Terry Dietrich is running for sure. Courtney is former state GOP chair, big in Scott Walker world. Terry Dietrich, Waukesha County chair, kind of built this like local operations, done very well in local races. Others are kicking the tires from what I'm hearing, so it's still a growing field. On the National Committee woman side, Mary Pat Kruger, longtime party activist, running for election again. She's being challenged by a vice chair of the Dane County GOP. Let's kind of put Courtney and Mary Pat in the same kind of lane as the traditional party activists. They've been involved for decades. I've been here for a long time. They've been even longer involved in the party than I've been around covering it. They have that Scott Walker kind of wing of the party. But Turning Point USA is this kind of a group that's aligned with Donald Trump, trying to get toeholds in county and state parties around the country, trying to get in and change the direction toward a more Trumpy direction. It's perceived that there's also going to be kind of a Turning Point type candidate. Dietrich wants to be that Turning Point type candidate for this race. And what I'm bringing this up again is, what direction is the party going to go? Because Trump will be done either after this fall or 2028, he'll be kind of out. They have to find a new standard bearer, a new leader. Will they continue going in a Trump direction? Or they go back toward the Walker, Paul Ryan kind of model? That's where they're kind of, I don't say it's a battle for the soul of the party necessarily, but it is kind of going to be an interesting race. Where's the base at these days?
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally a Mary Pat or a Brad Courtney, they've been there forever.
They
all
would have no
friends.
Problems in the past. Yeah.
We've been
to
conventions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the same group of people who are always there. But there's been this influx of new folks who've come in the last 4 or 5 years, mostly because of Trump, who are kind of like, they think they're really the true Republicans. These guys, the old guard, they're not, because it's now all about Trump. I'm kind of fascinated to watch how the election turns out and what happens with it.
Me too. And because don't forget, it was last year there was the vote to try to oust Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. There was a lot of party infighting that we saw. I mean, it's once again the Scott Walker era versus the MAGA Republican era. And we'll see kind of where these votes go.
The convention in 2022 in Middleton, I think it was, Paul Ryan's name came up during the convention, and he got booed.
He got booed, yeah.
If you told me a decade ago Paul Ryan would be booed at a state convention in Wisconsin, I thought you were crazy.
Right.
But it actually happened. I heard it in my own ears.
We were there. All right. Mix this week is Elijah Behnke.
Okay, so this is a fascinating development with the Assembly. So we've talked about these new maps Governor Evers, he drew them. There are 15 pairs in the assembly. 11 were Republican on Republican. Bankey was paired with David Stefan of Green Bay in a district that is a lot of Bankey's territory. Like, it goes up to Green Bay, Peshico, Marinette, Suamico, Oconto, those kind of areas. He's going to run now for the 6th Assembly District instead. Doesn't live there. In fact, if you line up the new maps and old maps, none of Bankey's population centers that he represents right now are in the 6th. The 6th, though, is occupied by Peter Schmidt, elected in 2022. And it all might be about money and help. So this is a long story. Let me get to it. So David Stefan's got $130,000 in the bank. Bankey's not a great fundraiser. Bankey's also a pain in the butt to Robin Voss. Okay? So you need help to win races, especially contested ones like that. The groups in Madison who are loyal, supportive of Robin Voss, who we're going to use, are not going to help Elijah Bankey against David Stefan. In the 6th, though, the Shawnee County GOP does not like Peter Schmidt. He had some legal problems before he ran, including a disorderly conduct charge for choking a migrant worker on his family farm. They were beside themselves that he won the 6-way primary in 2022 by like 71 votes. There was an effort to launch a writing campaign against him, but writing campaigns don't really work, especially in assembly district when you're talking thousands of votes. But the Shawnee County GOP is going to help Elijah Bankey. They're dedicated. They don't like Peter Schmidt that much. The problem for Bankey is a couple things. One, nobody knows him in this new district. He's not from that district. There's nobody. It's like totally new territory. And two, if you're a group in Madison who's going to help David Stefan, you're going to help Peter Schmidt most likely because Elijah Bankey is a pain in the butt for Robin Voss. Peter Schmidt, for whatever legal problems he's had, has been a loyal soldier in the Assembly GOP caucus. He votes with the team. He's not kind of, bucking leadership. Robin Voss can't afford to have too many pains, thorns in the side,
right,
come January. So look at the map. There is a path for Democrats to win the majority in the Assembly. But they probably need a plus 3 or 4 top-of-the-ticket result. Nobody sees polling right now that shows Joe Biden winning by 3 or 4 points in Wisconsin. Can he do it? Absolutely. Is it in the cards right now? Not so much. Tammy Baldwin, maybe she can. But can she have the coattails to help Democrats? Maybe. But let's assume a 50-50 presidential race. In that kind of environment, Republicans probably hold the Assembly, okay? But holding's not enough. They have to have 54, 55 seats. That's their real goal because at 52, Scott Allen from Waukesha has clashed with Robin Voss a number of times. No primary challenge right now. Chuck Wickers of Muskego, again, clashed with Ross a bunch of times. No primary challenge. Janelle Branchen, so she's running again. She's got Dan Canole in the primary, a state senator right now. So they're examples of people who, if they win, again, 50 is not enough.
Counting heads.
Yes.
Yep, counting votes.
What I'm getting at is it'll be interesting to watch. So the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee does not play in primaries most of the time, but the groups of support Voss do. Who are they going to help in some of these races? Where's the money going to go? And how does a guy like Bankey find friends to help him in a race like this?
That's quite the story. But it's interesting and it matters, right? I mean, we've talked about this before, too, about how Voss almost has to count how many votes he might not have depending on the maps and how the outcome comes come November. So it's going to be fascinating.
It's not just the raw number. It's who wins those seats
right,
this fall.
Right, that too. All right. Falling this week is Kimberly Zapata, who is the former Milwaukee election official. She was sentenced on Thursday. And after being guilty of many election fraud charges, she was just put on probation and has to pay a fine now.
It wasn't that bad. It could have been 3.5 years in prison. You got a year of probation, a $3,000 fine, so not as bad as it could have been. But again, if you're a whistleblower, there are sometimes better ways to express your concerns than what she did, which was, so if you are a military voter in Wisconsin, you can get an absentee ballot without showing an ID. She thought it was a flaw in the system, ordered some, had them sent Janelle Branchen to kind of expose the flaw, hoping that would like bring attention to it. Instead, it got her in trouble. So,
and that's the end of that saga.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. That will do it for this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.